It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Do you think anyone listens on Thanksgiving?
I don't know of anybody that listens on Thursday. Most of the people I know either listen whenever the hell they get around to it, or they listen on Friday. In fact, regularly, back in the day when my boss listened, she keeps saying she has to catch up, but she's not listening anymore. She would listen often on Friday mornings, and she would keep pausing it and coming out of her office to discuss things with me. And now, Coffee does that over instant message, because she'll generally listen Friday mornings. And so she's writing, essentially she's live tweeting it to me.
Well, why not say something on the blog so we can all
enjoy I believe that is something I have pointed out to them many times.
I understand maybe not wanting to do that, but I would enjoy hearing what they have to say, or unless they're saying bad things about me, then maybe it's okay.
I would enjoy that, though, so either way. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world whose official Thanksgiving entree is a chicken stuffed inside a turkey stuffed inside a giant block of tofu. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 246, our fifth annual Thanksgiving episode.
Da, 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 da. So be thankful that you've got us here. So you don't have to, I guess. I don't even know.
As always, we're thankful for our listeners, but we're thankful for our listeners every day, not just
we
on
really
Thanksgiving.
Are. Because there's not a lot of you.
Nope.
But you are fairly loyal, and the big thing is, it's a weird line. Like, knowing that a handful of people listen and appreciate is fine. If nobody listened, I'm not saying we wouldn't still do it, but it would feel weirder.
It would feel a little weird, yeah.
Now I feel like I do it for like five or six people, but that still feels worth it.
Yeah, that's all right. That's good.
Just knowing that somebody gives a damn.
Yeah. Know?
For those of you just joining us, here's how this show works. We have a hat. It's magical. Has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people like to write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little things. Little comments, notes, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Egg salad sandwich servants. The sad part of that is how that started was, what's a Thanksgiving food that starts with E?
E's are hard.
E's are hard. Anyway, it's egg salad sandwich servants. if I'm doing it, I'm owning it. Draw the note cards out of the hat randomly, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. We just did a show a few minutes ago, because I'm not hanging out with this guy on Thanksgiving.
Well, we've done, this show marks the 246th Thursday in a row, consecutive Thursday.
We've never missed a Thursday.
Since St. Patrick's Day in 2011, we've never missed a Thursday.
We got close, I believe. One time I forgot, and you called at like 20 till midnight. I was asleep.
Very
Rich
close.
Came and woke me
it
up.
Was very close.
But we pulled it off.
Yeah, never missed a Thursday. And since we're always doing it on Thursday, we're always going to have a show on Thanksgiving. Last year, I think we had one on Christmas, and then New Year's this year
I believe we did.
But, yeah. we can't rely on those holidays. Thanksgiving, because for those of you who don't know, who might live out of the country, Thanksgiving in the United States is official national holiday, and it's every fourth Thursday in November.
You're sure of that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, there was a little bit of a controversy in my wife's family recently about this, because one of her uncles passed away a year or so ago, but they had he was living out of state, and they didn't have, but he's from Clear Lake area, uh-huh. So they didn't have a special memorial service for him in Clear Lake until fairly recently. So we were up there, and it was mentioned that this fellow was born, I think, in 1922 in November, and they thought it was Thanksgiving, and they kind of made a big deal out of this, because for this particular uncle of hers, gratitude was kind of a big deal. Yes. So it was like, oh, well, he was born on Thanksgiving, how appropriate.
Yes.
And so some research was done, and it was discovered, indeed, he was born on the fourth Thursday in November. So, he was born in Thanksgiving, but the fourth Thursday in Thanksgiving was only established by Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yes.
Before that, it was the last Thursday in November, and sometimes there are five. And in 1922,
there were
five.
Yes.
So it happens he wasn't born on Thanksgiving.
And do you know why it changed? Why he did that?
I just thought he figured that that to have it on the last Thursday sometimes put it too late in the month, I thought. I mean, I thought it was a simple thing.
Not exactly. It was actually an economic decision, and it had to do with shopping. It had to do with the Christmas shopping after Thanksgiving.
Really?
Yeah. Well, okay. My source on this, I believe, is Wikipedia. So, take that as you will. But yeah, it had to do with, if it was that late, it screwed up the shopping thing.
I see.
Well,
I mean, all I know is that he changed it and made it the fourth Thursday.
There should just be a Wikipedia article called Weird Shit FDR Did. FDR, I mean, everybody knows, like, the New Deal, and everybody is familiar with World War II. But he also does it, like, he's the fucker that put Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm. And he's the guy who changed when Thanksgiving was. Like all sorts of just weird. He just was, like, throwing his fucking weight around.
Well, the result of that, of course, it means that Thanksgiving can only fall on a certain range of dates.
Yes.
It can never be earlier than a certain date, which I don't remember, the 22nd, I think. It can never be later than, I think, the 28th or something like that. Someone could check me on that. But that there's a specific range of dates that Thanksgiving will always fall under.
And then what's really confusing is Easter is actually based on a lunar cycle.
Right, it's the...
Because when I worked at a newspaper, we wanted to look it up. We're like, how do they decide? And so we finally looked it up, and it's based off of a lunar cycle.
That's the first,
and like,
well, both. It's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the vernal equinox.
Oh yeah, so it's also solar. Yeah,
yeah, so it's always after the vernal equinox. But if the full moon if there's a full moon close to it, and it's the first Sunday after that, so the range of times Easter can be is pretty wide. And the Roman Church does it differently than the Eastern Orthodox Church does, and I'm not sure what the difference is.
True of pretty much everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But I can't remember quite what the difference is, but I'm pretty sure the method I just recited was the Roman Church, how it does it.
Will you at least raise them Christian? Coptic Christian? No! Once again, Simpsons reference. What I do, people.
The podcast started on a holiday, St. Patrick's Day.
Yes.
So we do love our holidays, but even if we don't have the podcast on any other holiday during the year, it's always going to be
on Thanksgiving.
And I love that.
Yes, and I am fascinated by your love.
I know you're fascinated by it, but it is true. I love it. We're kind of big on gratitude, the two of us.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we both agree.
I'm not opposed to it.
No, I mean, but you often express in the podcast gratitude for things.
That's because I'm scared we're going to lose our last few listeners.
Well, no, like gratitude for the quality of your life, for your wife and things. Yeah. It's like, you understand, as I do, that gratitude in life is, if that's one of the keys to having a good and fulfilling life, is to be grateful for the things that you have and perhaps not worrying so much about the things that you don't have.
And my gratitude is the only thing that separates me from just being a complete and total douchebag.
Well, so. But I, in a way, that's true for everybody, I think. I mean, you really have two choices in life. You can appreciate what you've got and not worry about so much about what you don't have. Or you can just think about all the things you don't have all the time and completely take for granted the things you do have and not appreciate them.
Don't it always seem to go? Don't know what you got till it's gone.
There's no real reason not to be gracious, especially if you're like us. We live in the United States. We're white guys. You know, there's a lot for us to be grateful for and not
I'm
to complain about.
That I'm a white guy in the United States. I'm not, actually. I should be, but I'm not. All right. So, I had a really interesting thing to talk about.
You did.
But it's too heavily involving sex and my sexuality, so I figure you couldn't cope. So, we'll leave it.
Difficult to say?
No, you would not be able to handle this one way, I don't think. It's another one. As I've said before, I try and be as judgment-free as I can about my own orientation, my own fetishes, my own interests, as I think most people should be, as long as you're not hurting anybody else. Whatever.
I agree with that.
But in a wholly academic sense, and out of sheer curiosity, I frequently like to sort of look at those things and be like, huh, why is that like
sure.
that?
That's a good thing
so
to do, too, I think.
Recently, I just came to light with some interesting stuff.
Are you going to get graphic about
it?
Well,
no, that's the problem. I can't really do
this. Oh, okay, I see.
Without freaking you out, so.
Without freaking you out.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving? What are you doing right now?
This probably comes up every single year. A week ahead of time, I often don't know for sure. I mean, I will be going home to somewhere.
You're going to somewhere in the Des Moines area or somebody's freaking house.
That's all I ever know. And, you know, sometimes right up to the last minute, I don't know. Well, and we're going to have snow here. I mean, tomorrow there's supposed to be a big snowstorm. When I say tomorrow, I mean a week ago. Well, Friday. Yes. The last Friday, not
November
today.
20th.
And
so by now, we have already eaten the dead to survive.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen after. I don't know if the snow is all going to melt. I don't know if we're going to get more snow.
According to the weather report, I think it's going to melt because, like, mid-next week, it's, like, in the 50s.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, then it's going to melt. But if that happens, then, yeah, we'll make it home. But if other snows happen or something, I mean, we could get stranded here. Who knows? I mean, we don't... my family doesn't... They're not really in favor of us risking our lives to get home for Thanksgiving. But barring anything like that, well, I'll be down on the farm. That's in Marion County. Or I'll be in Indianola, where my sister lives. Or I'll be in Des Moines, where my oldest brother lives. Or I could be in Ankeny.
Alaska.
I could be in Ankeny, where my youngest brother lives.
Or Alaska.
That's where my... the brother right after me lives, and
I'm
not going to Alaska.
They might decide to have it there.
No. That never happens.
I'm going to my in-laws, like I do, and Trish and I are already trying to figure out, we're taking bets as to how many pies there will be. My mother-in-law has too many pies.
You always say that, but how can there ever be too many pies?
Well, all right. So, at Thanksgiving... There are seven adults, two children, total.
Mm-hmm.
Children are 8 and 10, I believe, at this point. And seven adults. And this year, I think we're going to have, my guess is that we're going to have at least 6 pies.
That doesn't sound like too many.
So a pie a person.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, that's great. Oh, yeah. I mean, when I go home and we have pie, and if I can eat a lot of pie without, you know, taking pie away from other people, I'll eat a lot of pie. Maybe not a whole pie. Half a pie, maybe, though.
Well, this is...
Like half a pumpkin pie.
4 days.
Half a pumpkin pie, yeah. Easily.
Yeah. There will be 2 pumpkin pies, because my mother-in-law swears that the can Makes two. There's just no way around it.
Okay.
There will be a French silk pie, because certain people in the family really like that. It will most likely be store-bought. Most of the rest of these will most likely be store-bought. There may be a homemade. There will be some sort of berry pie for a particular child who tends not to like other kinds. So it might, could be cherry, could be probably blueberry, but one of those kinds.
Oh, man, those are both good.
And then, and here's the part we can't remember. Either at Thanksgiving or at Christmas, a homemade pecan pie shows up from a brother-in-law's mom. She always sends it with him. And so if that's there...
I like a good pecan pie.
And then there's just... I love pecan pie. Yeah. I also love pumpkin pie. And then there's just random pies that happen. Because like somebody once mentioned a pie they had, so then she went and got one. So like one year, in addition to the French silk, we had a one that was basically a mint French silk.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, others have snuck in where somebody like brought another fruit pie and stuff like that. We had a Dutch apple snuck in there one time. So we've had as many as 9 pies, I think.
It's a lot of pies, but there's a lot of people. I mean, that's a pretty good large group of people.
Yes. Well, but it happens at Christmas too. And the other problem at Christmas is, in addition to the pies and of course the cookies and everything like that, we have a cake. Because we have a cake.
Oh yeah,
for
the
Jesus
cake. Yes. Yeah.
And one year, Jesus told my mother-in-law that he wanted chocolate.
Yeah, you told this story before.
I still have difficulty with this. She's a Christian woman.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like it's kind of ballsy to be like, Jesus said... Well, okay, no, let me rephrase. I feel like it's kind of ballsy or straight up clinical mental illness to claim that Jesus told you he wanted chocolate. But because of that, I forget why, but like last year Christmas, we had two. We had two cakes. By the time we left, which was like 5 days later, one of the cakes had not yet been cut into.
Jesus loves his cake, I guess.
We don't ever leave him any, though. Should have, like, offerings, you know? But, yeah, so we're going to have a lot of pie. And other stuff. I'm waiting until after Thanksgiving to get back onto the Weight Watchers horse, like, for real.
You know what?
It just seems silly to like start now.
You know what? You know what you should do. You should offer to get the cake, and you should have, when they decorate it, you should put on the top, "Do this in remembrance of me." I wonder if anyone would even dare to eat it.
Oh my god!
That would be hilarious. Well, to me it would be. Maybe that's not funny to other people, but it is to me.
Stone on the top, and 3 days later we move it, and the cake is empty.
Well, you know.
Put a shroud over the cake. No, I'm not. Actually, I did want to go with the producer to pick up the cake, but no, the cake comes from a specific bakery every year.
Yes, that's right.
Which is funny, because they never seem to remember. Each time they're surprised when she's like, and she should say, "Happy birthday, Jesus."
I'm pretty sure it's not unusual. I think last time you talked about this, I sent some link about people doing this. It's kind of a thing other people do, too.
Well, okay. A lot of people in southern, like, Spanish-speaking countries do it. Hmm. Not because, as you would think, because it's predominantly Catholic, but because they have a lot of people just named Jesus, and those guys have birthdays, so they make them cakes.
No, I'm saying I think the last time we talked about this, but which I don't think was on Thanksgiving. I think it was closer to Christmas.
My New Year's resolution this year was sometimes she has to spell Jesus for them. Those, like, okay, here's
they don't know
the
how
thing.
To spell Jesus?
I don't believe in God. I don't believe in hell. I still believe those people are going to it. That's ridiculous. Okay, there we go. Joseph? Yeah. No, Jesus.
You really
you know, Jesus. Like the Lord and Savior.
But see, again, I mean, surely they've heard enough of enough.
His family called him Chucho.
Surely they've heard of enough people named Jesus to know. I mean, or did, if they heard Jesus, would they be okay with it? But when you say Jesus, that's what throws them off?
It's small town Illinois. Anybody's guess.
Well, but even just about every small town in Iowa these days has Hispanic population.
Yes, but those people are not allowed to buy cakes.
It's a they are.
No, it's a weird Illinois state law.
Okay, whatever.
In Illinois, Mexicans can't buy cakes. They're trying to get it repealed. Like, nobody's in favor of it, but you know how corrupt Illinois
politics is.
Yes. They've been trying forever. Like, there's daring midnight raids as, like, Mexicans cross the border into Iowa or Minnesota to get cakes and then try and smuggle them back. And there are people, there are coyotes
that
will charge an exorbitant amount to sneak your cake
over
the border.
That sounds like a business opportunity. We probably better get over to Davenport or maybe Dubuque. It's
like, well, you know, like around here, like when we get to the Missouri border, there's all the
fireworks. That's right.
Cake stands.
I know, but that's
around Illinois.
That's a huge financial boon for the people that do that. Maybe we should think about that.
They just come over, gorge themselves on cake, and go back. It's really awful. It's one of the most embarrassing aspects of Illinois. That weirdly they used to have on the signs. Welcome to Illinois. Mexicans can't have cake. Like is what it said. And this was in like the '50s, you know, when they thought that was cool.
Fifties. Oh.
Yeah. No. I mean, back then, like nowadays, they'd be embarrassed to have that.
But, like okay.
But it's still on the books.
On the books.
I have no idea what the lobby is that keeps it going, but it's clearly very powerful. Somebody is donating a lot of campaign funds to ensure that Mexicans in Illinois.
Would you want to live in a state that you can't eat cake?
So you think they're just trying to get rid of
them? Yes. What else could it be?
There we go.
Who wants to live in a state where you can't eat cake?
All things considered, it's anti-abortionist? Mexicans eating cake is? No, it's Mexican cake. It's anti-abortionist. A for effort, baby. A for effort. I wondered.
If a state makes it illegal for illegals to eat cake, maybe they'll go to the neighboring state that will let them eat cake, and that's the plan, maybe.
Of all the horrific political schemes that have been done to attempt to remove or eradicate or frighten off a particular ethnicity, that's probably the most adorable.
Well, I don't know.
I've ever heard, like, that's...
No.
What about them?
They passed a bill today that specifically makes it harder for Syrian and Iranian
refugees. Yeah, that's right. Of course they
did. Well, that would be a week ago now.
Yeah. Passed a law to make it harder for Syrian and Iranian refugees to come to this country.
Obviously, as a result of, well, not a result, a response to the attacks in Paris. And
yes.
Because the idea is that...
to say the least, this is why we can't have that.
Well, I mean, our governor here in Iowa has been making comments, you know, about not wanting Syrians... to come into the state and seek sanctuary here, which I, you know, disagree with. I'm not really
sure. What's the argument?
Well, the argument is that
they'll take our job.
No. The argument is that it's the terrorists are hiding among these refugees going places.
Fuck right off.
Yeah.
Fuck right off, people. You might be some of the good ones, but we can't take the chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. fuck you sideways.
That's what people are saying. I think there's plenty of evidence to dispute that idea. I mean, the big problem right now in terms of terrorism, and I'm not saying that there aren't people coming in a variety of different ways. Don't get me wrong. But my understanding is the largest threat for terrorism is what they're calling homegrown terrorists.
Yeah.
Not the people who might be coming here hiding among refugees, but the people who already live here, are citizens
and,
here.
And the terrorist attempts that have happened in recent years back that up.
Well, the Paris attacks...
Sorry, the domestic terrorist
right.
things.
Yes, but my understanding, and maybe I haven't really been keeping up on the news, so someone can correct me on this, I suppose. But I thought they said that the masterminds of the Paris attack were from Belgium, and I'm like they were from there. It wasn't like Syrian refugees in Belgium, and then they got into Paris.
But that people from Belgium are assholes.
Well, what I'm saying is that the attacks in Paris.
I shouldn't say that. I'm pretty sure our new CEO is from Belgium.
I mean, I'm
so
not.
I probably should.
I'm not
say
sure
that.
About like the
sorry,
the
Martin.
Other
love
bombings,
you.
You know, Beirut or whatever. But in Paris specifically, I don't think that it has anything to do with Syrian refugees. But everyone's talking about that.
No, and it's yeah. And honestly, I got my hackles up a little bit with, like. My heart goes out to all the victims and the victims' families in Paris. But again, this has been going on a ton because now it's in a Western European country. We're all suddenly freaked out.
Yeah, that's right.
Been happening plenty of other places. It happened in Beirut 2 days before.
Yep, yep.
Nobody
yep.
gave a fuck.
Well, some people did, but
well,
I hear what you're saying. It wasn't
nobody
getting...
changed a Facebook filter.
I know, right? And the airplay on the United States wasn't.
Now, don't get me wrong. All those gestures you do for the people in Paris also don't mean shit. But why is it? I hate that we only care about this certain people.
Yeah,
I'm an equal opportunity misanthrope. Fuck all y'all, but. Still. So we're thankful. We're so thankful.
I knew that was coming.
Of course, because it's Thanksgiving.
We're really fortunate. I mean,
I'm ridiculously fortunate.
Yeah.
There are
things in our lives that we wish were different, of course. And that
my life's pretty awesome.
And that we aspire to be different, but as it
has have
you it,
seen my wife? Holy shit.
When you add things up, we really don't have very much to complain about when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of the things, just about all the things that I can think of that I wish were different, it's really about the quality of life of people that I know that aren't doing
absolutely.
As well as I'm
absolutely.
Doing. So
it's about the world. It's not, I'm, and all the things that I want to improve about my lot in life are things that it's up to me.
Like, yeah, right.
It's not, or potentially in some cases things that are impossible. I mean, I have medical issues that I may never be able to fix.
Right, but
like
nobody's
that,
bombing
but
our streets, or
no. I got a great life.
You know, we don't have to worry about food or shelter or anything. I mean, it's just when you think about other people in the world today and for all time in humanity, it's just amazing how rich we are. And, there's really not much to complain about, except that other people, for whatever reason, can't be as well off as we are for no good reason. I mean, you know what I'm saying? When you look out across the world and you think, why can't this group of people or this people in this country or whatever have all of the benefits that we have? There's no good reason.
Yeah.
It's just political BS. And, you know, it's part of it has to do with the country they're in. Part of it has to do with the countries that interact with them, including our country.
Yeah.
And it's just sad that it has to be like that.
I should tell this here because you might have good input that you could send me, and listeners also could on this. So, I think we've discussed before that on my wife's side of the family, we do Christmas lists.
Mm-hmm.
Which initially kind of bothered me because it was very different than how I was raised.
Yeah.
We didn't do Christmas lists over there.
Right.
My friends did, we didn't. because it sort of defeated the purpose of that. And I was like, but it's their tradition. And over time, I was like, wait, this is actually awesome. I tell people things I want, and they give them to me. Mm-hmm. That's good.
So, well, and it's easier for them. For them.
Well, and then in recent years, I've been pushing back a little bit because we're doing okay, and I don't need a lot of stuff. And so a lot of things is like, I can write down stuff, but it's either stuff that I'm just going to buy for myself, or stuff that I don't want enough to have bought for myself, so how bad do I actually want it?
Right.
You know? And so I've said, like, if you don't have to give me anything, and if you come up with something, that's awesome, too, like, whatever. But here's some stuff for those who really want to do it. Well, I think I'm taking this to a new level this year. Probably during the Thanksgiving holidays when I'll put together my list finally. But I think my list is basically going to be probably some small generalized items. Or just stuff like for example, bandanas, like to hold your hair back and whatever. I've been thinking I should get some of those.
Okay.
And those are cheap and variety, you know, so people can give me, so I'll probably put that just on the list, you know, stuff, little things like that. So that people have things they can go for. And then otherwise, I'm going to do some research, and I think I'm just going to put down a list of charities that I'd like for you to donate to.
That's nice.
Because it really... It, it's not that I'm anti-materialism. I love material. but it just seems silly at this point. I love gifts also, but gifts as a duty... I've always hated, and especially now, there's not the to reach a level at this point in my life where there's a gift that I want that I am unwilling or unable to afford to get for myself puts it out of a range that anybody's going to get me either. Like, you want to do that? Get me a Prius. That would be awesome. I totally want one. And I can't afford to get one. So if you want to get me a Prius, do it. But, you know, a PlayStation 4. I'll probably wait until after Christmas in case somebody does. But if they don't, I'm just going to go buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm done with Assassin's Creed 4 or Rogue. And just stuff like that. Like books, movies. I'll just get them if I want them. And so it seems like... And I don't disparage anybody who comes up with a gift that they want to get me. That's awesome. I got some last year like that were really cool, especially from the kids. That I actually still use at work and stuff. It's really cool. But just in terms of making the list, I was like, no. And I was like, and that feels better because, frankly, I'm too lazy to give to charity myself a lot of times. So I'm like, well, this helps everybody. And I think so I think that's how I'm going to do this year.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. But I don't know a lot of charity. I mean, I know a lot of charities. I don't know a lot of charities that I both believe in and like, trust. Because that's the thing, is some charities make better use of their money than others.
Yeah, well, that's
and
tough.
And I don't particularly want... I've got... The people who are getting this list have a diversity of beliefs. I don't particularly want to put in ones that I feel were outright offend anyone.
No, yeah, you know? I see, yeah.
So, like, not that I don't believe in it, but, like, Planned Parenthood will probably not be on my list, because I know some people in my family that would find that weird.
Well, the... My big go-to charity when I just wanted... I mean, I used to give to charity all the time. I, and especially when I was going to church, I would tithe, and then I would, which went to straight to the church, and then I would also give a little extra as an offering that would go to various things, sometimes related to the church, sometimes not. And then I would give to charities outside of that, like at work, you know, United Way and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite charity to give to where I felt like I felt the most confident about, okay, I know, I feel very confident this is going to something good.
Yeah.
Although I'm not sure what my justification for that is. It's just the charity that I felt that way about was the American Red Cross.
Okay.
It just always felt like, and I was involved with the Red Cross on several levels too, and it just seemed like I think that this is probably good.
I feel like that's a good one. I feel like Doctors Without Borders is also a pretty good
one. Sure, sure, things like that. I mean, the difficulty with charities today is that a lot of them are pretty big business themselves.
Yeah.
You find out, and you're kind of disillusioned to find out that so much of your dollar goes to their administrative costs and things like that. But But if you're going to give to a charity that's not something super local, that's for, you know, Timmy's operation at the university hospital or something, well, you're going to have to deal with that. There's no way around it.
Well, and to the degree that if you go for one that's not like that, they frequently don't have the infrastructure to do as much with the money at the same time. So it's a catch-22.
That's right.
Because I've run into that before. They're like, oh, no, these are too huge or whatever. It's like, yeah, but if you give this little one, they don't know how to get the most bang for the buck. Like, especially, you know, feeding people in starving places. Yep. A lot of the bigger ones know how to get deals so they can get really cheap food.
Well, like the American Cancer Society is another thing that we've given to frequently. That's one of those deals where it's kind of like you said, not a lot of your dollar is going to go to where you want it to go. And yet, if you give it to another charity where more of your dollar is going to go to stuff, it won't go...
It'll get you less.
Yeah, it'll somehow get you less.
More money will get you less.
That's exactly right. That's where you're exactly right.
And you have to sort of find a happy medium. Yep. And there's other factors.
Right. But you don't like to do stuff, so you don't want to go researching all these different charities and so on.
A little bit, but I mean, I trust you, and I trust a lot of our listeners, and I mean, and also, it's a place to start. So if people want to tell me, go to the blog and tell me.
Yeah, that's a good
charities,
idea.
Charities, then I'll go look at them. And I mean, like, you know, I may, there's a few resources I think I know I can do it. I just realized who will not be on my list, but who might end up being a gift to me anyway, is going to be Susan G. Komen. Because I'm, not that I have anything against Susan G. Komen, I feel like it's been done. Like, they get enough money, essentially. I want to go other places. And also, I'm really tired of awareness campaigns. But my mother-in-law... way into that, so she might end up doing that anyway. And I mean, I'm not opposed, but
you're not thinking of like political charities, for example, or political causes. I shouldn't call them charities, I guess.
You need to get into more specifics, but I believe the answer is no.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, the representation project, for example. One thing that if I had any spare money lying around, I would probably buy. The full curriculum, high school and elementary school, of the Representation Project's Misrepresentation and The Mask You Live In. The one is about female representation in media, and the second one is about male representation in media. And there are films appropriate for various levels of elementary school and high school and curriculums.
Oh no, that would totally. Totally a contender.
And they're not very expensive, but I would like get those and like donate them to the Iowa City, you know, school board or something, that they could maybe have assemblies or something, and they could show these things and have some curriculum. Because I think that if we're ever going to do something about the poor media representation of women and girls, and the harmful media representation of men and boys, we got to start talking to the kids, because a lot of the adults either don't care, or it's not going to speak to them because it's already deep in, you know what I'm saying? Got its hooks in, so it's not going to matter. But to the kids will care. You know, there's that famous piece of research. I'm not even sure if it's real anymore, because people quote it all the time, but it sounds legitimate. That if
called Godwin's law.
No, if you ask kindergartners, you know, who wants to be president or whatever, well, you get so many kids, but it's an equal number of boys and girls, and that doesn't change until you get to like middle school. So the big change there in teaching girls specifically that they can't be certain things when they grow up happens somewhere between kindergarten and seventh grade. So how can we, you know, how can we intervene with that?
So tell them all, none of you can be president. Stop trying.
So that's one thing I would
do. Also, you, Jesus, you're not allowed to eat cake. You'll have to sit in the back while this.
This isn't Illinois. Come on. This is Iowa.
That's true.
Everybody can have cake here.
Everybody. Let them eat cake. Cake or death. Trish was listening to that Eddie Izzard bit earlier today. Cake or death. Do you have cake or death?
Of course, the cake is a lie, but...
Yes. Oh, my God. I pulled that out in a meeting and nobody got it. I was so mad.
Oh, well.
All right. Well, we're running out of time, so we probably should draw something.
Oh, draw something out of the hat. It's Thanksgiving. We got to have something.
Thankful we got things to draw.
Anonymous asks, what is your favorite Asimov novel?
Oh.
You don't really like Asimov, do you?
I don't. Hmm. I have read exactly 3 novels, two of which aren't novels. I've read the original Foundation trilogy. It's the only thing I've read.
I read all the Foundation books, all the Empire books, all the robot books.
Wait, when you say all the Foundation books,
yeah,
you mean all 9?
He
wrote the original trilogy, and then he wrote a prequel trilogy and a sequel trilogy.
Yes.
All right.
I'm talking. This is like, I don't remember.
But
how
I feel
many.
Like
this
some
is
of
16
them are...
or 17 books. I'm talking about.
Okay.
Total.
It's because I feel like some of them are relatively recent, so.
Well, I mean, yeah, like one came out just before he died.
Yeah.
Prelude to Foundation, I think, was the last one. To pick my favorite isn't totally impossible. I mean, I like them all. I wish I could say which is my favorite. I also read the version of Nightfall that he wrote with another author, Silverman?
Robert Silverberg?
I think so.
He's out of the same generation of sci-fi people.
Well, now there was a short story.
Yes.
That I actually haven't read.
I haven't either, but I have heard an audio rendition of it for the 100th episode of Escape Pod. Can you beat my cat with a stick or something?
The book is actually a lot better. Mm. And it's really, really good. I wouldn't say it's my favorite Asimov book. I also read...
he smells pizza in there.
I also read...
Kitten. Not for you.
Let's see. Some guy wrote a iRobot screenplay that they never made.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty good, but technically that's not an Asimov novel, so...
Wait, iRobot's not an Asimov novel?
The screenplay that this
screenplay
guy wrote.
Oh, yeah.
But he based it on Asimov stuff, obviously.
I would think.
So yeah, I
don't know. I
don't really have a favorite.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Why are you hissing at your brother? He did not do anything. Stop being weird. What? I don't think Ezzy's hissing at him because he was trying to eat the pizza. That would be impressive. Are you going to keep your brother in line from now on? Is that how this works? I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a weird relationship with classic sci-fi. And I appreciate it on a certain level. But... Well, there is that. It's sexist as well.
That is a problem.
But...
Well, that's Asimov too.
Honestly...
And racist, even.
The things I appreciate about it and the things I dislike are the same things. Classic sci-fi had a very specific sort of point to it. It was very scientific,
mm-hmm.
in a lot of cases, and then to a lesser degree, social.
Mm-hmm.
It made a lot of social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool, and I enjoy that to a degree. But... real character and drama and things like that and dynamic relationships and things like that is something I love in my narratives in general, and I don't get that from a lot of classic science fiction. It's to me they're much more just sort of hypothetical thought experiments, and they're very thought provoking.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different thing.
I agree with that.
I like them, but I like them in small doses. And I remember experiencing that, actually, because I became a fan of Robert Silverberg from a few things. I picked up Kingdom of the Wall, and then later I went back and did the Madripoor stuff. I did not all of it, but I've done a lot of the Madripoor books. And I loved those, and so then I picked up a collection of his short stories going back all the way to, like, the 30s.
Mm.
And there was a bit of culture shock because it was much more classic science fiction, and it just had a sterility to it. I mean, it was very thought-provoking, very interesting, and I read them all, and I liked them on a certain level, but there is a sterility to it that I didn't go for. That you find in most. The exception being Heinlein. Heinlein's been all about the character development and the relationships and all that from the get-go.
Yeah, I suppose.
Consequently, he suffers even more from the issues of weird sexism and racism and all that kind of stuff, because he's dealing with those characters, so he mistreats them much more broadly.
In a way of compromise, I'll say, really, Asimov's books, the Empire Robot and Foundation books, are all in the same continuity. So technically, it's all one big thing.
He sort of worked at that later.
No, that's right. But in a way of compromise, since I can't pick a favorite book, I'll say that out of the Empire Robot and Foundation series, it's tough because I really like the Robot series, but the Foundation series is probably my favorite.
The Foundation series is just fascinating.
The whole psycho-history thing is really neat. Yes. I mean, I just love it. I love
it. Well, and a little prophetic in terms of nowadays the whole big data
concept. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
It really sort of ties in there. But just I'm fascinated by the, let's be honest, social engineering aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
From a time when that didn't exist yet as a concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, for those who aren't familiar with the Foundation series, to a large degree, it is an experiment in trying to save society from its downfall in the far future. And then a great deal of the series involves the various machinations, for lack of a better term, to maintain that.
Right.
Because it acknowledges the shifts in society post-collapse and how this civilization, in order to maintain its survival, responds to that and predicts those movements.
Galactic-sized civilization.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a key because one of the big ideas here, and the reason Tony mentions big data, is because it's kind of a big deal that we're dealing with so many worlds and so many people. We're dealing with, the numbers are so huge that patterns start to emerge that you won't see just on, say, the scale of a single planet.
Yes. They invented a discipline called psychohistory that's basically like big data predictions nowadays, but before any of that existed. And that's the whole initial premise, is this guy invents this discipline, crunches the numbers, and is like, oh shit, the entire galactic civilization is going to collapse soon.
Right.
And then we're fucked. But then he comes up with a way how we can essentially keep knowledge and civilization alive, and it's still going to collapse, but it'll come back much faster than it would
if
we didn't have that.
That's right.
And then the story is seeing that play out, and if that happens and how that happens.
And there's some secrecy involved, because if too many people know too much about what the model predicts, it'll create this sort of feedback loop.
Absolutely.
And things will get a little crazy. So right at the very beginning, if you're reading the Foundation trilogy first, if anyone who's going to read them, I would recommend not reading Prelude to Foundation first.
No.
It was written later and should be read that way.
I tend to be, in general, with the chronological, like the actual written chronological order for most series.
Yeah. Right off the bat, most of everything we've just said is going to be established early in the book in terms of what psychohistory is, why it works, how it works, and who's allowed to know about it, not know
the
about
stuff
it.
We just told you is essentially the back of the book stuff.
And also a big thing early in the story is the establishment of the Encyclopedia Galactica. So that's another big part of it.
And its dating is interesting because the major advantage of the Foundation after everything collapses is essentially their nuclear power.
Yeah.
And it just does everything.
Oh,
it's fucking magic. Everyone's like, oh, our nuclear power. Yeah, so we're doing everything with our nucleics, I believe.
One of the coolest things I remember is their trash receptacles. You'd throw something in there, and the thing that you threw in there would immediately be completely atomized, basically, by the atomic... by
fission.
Well, yeah, whatever was atomizing it was powered by atomic power. Yeah. Everything was, the ships were, everything was.
And it's just, and so much of it, and a lot of it though, it's back in the day when we didn't even know yet, really, you know? So a lot of it is, oh yeah, it'll just fucking do everything. Nuclear power. Like, yeah, we invent all sorts of stuff, and nobody else has it. That's the key. With nuclear power, you have all this shit. Without it, you're like the Flintstones.
Well, the reason the Foundation series is my favorite is because it's, and you know, I've read a few things that are kind of like this, but I've not read anything that I think is as good at it or is as fascinating to me at it. It's like, if you were going to make anthropological or sociological science fiction, this would be it.
Absolutely.
And you know, I'm sure a lot of people think, well, I know a lot of stuff like that, and I've probably seen it or heard about it, but something about this I find more compelling than just about any other kind I've ever heard about.
Well,
I don't
know
why.
It is very straightforward in it. It's, you can say, oh, this, like, it's not subtext. It's
no,
the point.
That's right. But
there are other things that I think have subtext along with. There's some Silverberg stuff I think you might like that has some of these social evolution subtext.
Well, and Arthur C. Clarke. Arthur C. Clarke too.
Clarke again, but again, it's usually subtext in favor of a more more traditional narrative.
Right.
And this one, in fact, and that's part of my thing with Foundation Trilogy. I think it has this fascinating concept and these fascinating ideas almost at the expense of story. I feel like the story isn't that good because they spend so much time on the fascinating details of the premise and how it plays out. So I'm really glad I read them. I find it interesting. I could discuss them at great length. I didn't necessarily enjoy at the time in the same way. Again, less of a story, more of like a thought experiment.
Well, and I mean, I suppose you can understand how a person who's not usually a fan of fiction would enjoy just that kind of thing. Well, and I think what it comes down to for me, and the reason I'm probably a bigger fan of Asimov than any other fiction author or science fiction author probably specifically, is because I think, and I've read Heinlein, I've read Clarke, I've read lots of other writers of that period, and I've read a lot of people since. I just think that out of all the people I've read, Asimov, for me personally, and maybe there's some objective way even to measure this, but he just seems to be a more insightful and a more accurate and just an overall better futurist than everybody else. I mean, everyone's trying to guess what the future is going to be like, and it just seems like Asimov's really good at that.
Asimov, to date, has a really great track record compared to most everybody else.
And of course, I really love that.
We're getting meta at this point because now people are basing their social movements and their technologies on science fiction.
Yeah.
So we're almost getting to the point where nobody can get any predictive things. Church of All Worlds, the iPad, basically everything from Star Trek. Scientology is a whole other kettle of Thetans. And on that note, it's a little early, but I want to wrap it up because we're running late and I'm tired and I haven't eaten my dinner yet. You guys go eat pie. And tell me some charities that would be good.
Yeah, do that. I'd like to see those too. Because
what even is that you're messing with?
I don't know. It's a little piece of metal.
That's weird. All right, and tune in next week, which for us will be in 2 weeks, and we'll be back with more show. Can I really get away with calling this episode Mexicans Can't Eat Cake?
You're going to do what you're going to do, so
I know, but I'm nervous.
Well,
there are lines.
Nobody knows where you live.
Most people know where I live.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.